Hello and welcome to QSO. It's all about ham radio. And our guest this week is Richard Stubbs. Richard is the customer service manager for MFJ Enterprises in Starkville, Mississippi. Boy, he's got some insight into ham radio and gadgets and, well, just about everything. So keep it right here is our co-host, Frank Howell, K4FMH, myself, and Richard Stubbs are right here on QSO. There you go. It's time now for QSO Live, and we want to welcome you in to this radio broadcast coming to you over WTWW on 5085 kilohertz. And our co-host is Frank Howell, K4FMH, and he's our co-host, I guess I want to say permanently for this show. He may not like that idea, though, so I don't know, but I want to say hello to Frank. How are you this evening?
With all of the revenue I'm making from being co-host, how could I ever leave? I'm doing great.
Well, I never expected you to, start sharing personal information over the air. We have a guest tonight, ladies and gentlemen, and you can find him in the MFJ catalog, and when you find him, you will notice that someone has drawn a beard on him. I don't know why they did that, but anyways, Richard Stubbs is with us tonight, and he is with the MFJ company, which is, I guess I want to say, the radio amateur's dreamland of toys and accessories for ham radio. And I want to welcome you on in to the show. We appreciate you joining us here. And
that's awesome, Ted. Good to hear your voice again. I remember seeing you at Huntsville, and we talked very briefly, and me and Holly and your son. And so, and Frank, good to hear your voice again, too.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. When you go to the ham fests, especially... of course, Dayton. See, I never get over to the main hardly the main arena because I can't wander too far away from the booth. But I do get to see your display at the Huntsville Ham Fest, and wow, you know, I mean, you go, they got this whole section of Ameritron stuff. You've got Cushcraft, you've got High Gain, and all the MFJ accessories, all kinds of things. I've got one MFJ paddle here. I've got a keyer. I've got another combination paddle keyer. And I started out years ago, the first MFJ piece of equipment I ever bought. When I was very young, I had a Drake TR-3, and I purchased the MFJ CW filter. Little bitty blue box, ran on a 9-volt battery. Seems like...
That was his first product.
And I wired it in to the volume control on the Drake, so it actually worked in line. So when I flipped it on, and later when I got the I think I upgraded to the TR-4 or the TR-4C, and I bought the Drake CW filter, and I tried to operate CW with it, and I was most unhappy with that thing. I went and I grabbed my MFJ CW filter, which would go all the way down to 80 hertz. And I wired it back into the volume control of the new Drake rig, and I never touched the 500 kilohertz filter, or 500 hertz filter, or whatever it was. I can't remember. But the filter would go all the way down to 80 hertz. Did you ever work with one of those, Frank?
I'm not a code guy yet. It's on my to-do list. but I do know the story behind that filter. And I will tell you this, Ted. If you filter the story with a martini and Martin, it goes down a whole lot easier.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had guys tell me.
There's one of those filters hanging in our hallway. You've never been to the factory yet. We need to get you all down there to tour the facility. But there's one of those filters hanging right in the front hallway because that's Mr. Jew's original first product. From 1972, that's how the That's how MFJ came to be way back when.
Well, you know, I had people say to me, they said, well, you know, those audio filters, they ring and they do this and they do that. And I'm telling you what, he figured out a way somehow to make that thing work impeccably. And I mean, and you, once you got it down to that 80 hertz position, you tuned ever so carefully, and then you could single out one. You know, see, I'm ADD. I can't listen to three CW signals at once. Some of these people can do that, you know. I can't. Yeah. I'm not one of them. But you could single that thing out. I never heard any ringing sound and all that kind of stuff, but I did hear a couple of other CW filters that friends of mine had, and I don't know how they used them, because the things just sounded horrible, you know, so I don't know. But that was my first experience with MFJ, and evidently I didn't know who I was dealing with. I didn't have any idea who Martin Jew was, and of course he certainly didn't know who I was, but I bought his filter, and I think it was like $19 or something. It was just, you know.
He told me, he said he sold it as a kit as $9.95, and the thing was very humble. I mean, we're talking humble beginnings. It looks pretty, you know, it's like on a cardboard box kind of thing where the parts are put in. And then he sold it as a $14.95 wired unit, meaning he had tested it and put it together himself. So it was pretty humble beginnings to where we are now. So,
listen, Ted, part of that Martini story with Martin, how he got his assembly line was, I think it was 50 cents a board to some of his electronics engineering students over at Mississippi State to do the assembly. And if it worked, they got the 50 cents and a good grade.
That's very true. And he also said he used to borrow the car because his car didn't work, so he could go to the Hamfest back when, and he would let them drive and take him to the Hamfest, and that would get some extra credit, I'm sure.
Well, I want to know let's, you know, back up a little bit here. How did you get connected, I guess I want to say, with MFJ? And I know you were a licensed ham at one time, but I want to know how you got connected up with all of it, because, I mean, right now, man, you're in pretty deep, you know.
Well, 21 years, yes, sir.
He's probably the second most recognizable figure at MFJ. Richard, you may not agree with that, but I think looking at the media on the internet, besides Martin's picture, your picture and name appear second.
Yeah, I believe, you know, I've done a lot of the news stuff, the picture taking, the catalog. You know, I'm on the road 22 shows a year. I'm getting ready to go to Cincinnati next week. So I am out there. Whereas Mr. Jew is the founder of the president of the company. Ted, I started in newspaper advertising and I had a long career there for about, well, I say a long career. That's about 10 years, I guess. I'm 51 now. And then I was, selling advertising, and Randy Romero, who's my the human resources director at MFJ, called me and I had sold advertising to him. He was once a restaurateur. He had his own restaurant in Stark Vegas, as we like to call it. And so I went over there and I started doing their catalog, and I started traveling and doing the Hamfest 21 years ago. And I met Mr. Jew, and he took me out to lunch. He toured me through all the factories, and it was about 3 months later they called me back. So it took a while, but I got in their door, and I just kept on going after that.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO, and we'll be right back with our special guest, Richard Stubbs from MFJ Enterprises, right after this. Now, the last thing you want to do is run out of shopping days before Christmas. There's no need to do that. All you got to do is go to one website. That's R&L Electronics. If you're thinking ham radio, you're buying for a ham or buying for yourself at Christmas time? Why not? R&L Electronics. Now listen, go to their website and look at what they've got. Talk about ideas. They've got towers, radio accessories. They have HF radios, VHF radios, UHF radios. They've got power supplies. They've got connectors. They've got coax and cable. They've got books on amateur radio. They've got amateur radio tuners, antenna tuners, I should say, automatic and manual. They've got antenna mounts. They've got all sorts of antenna accessories, along with antennas themselves. And they also have big amplifiers, and they have medium-sized amplifiers, and they've got preamps, and they've got used equipment, and they've got all the major brand names like Kenwood, Yaesu, ICOM, Alinco, you name it. It's all there at R&L Electronics. Now, another thing, they carry used items, radios that have been previously owned that are in mint condition, and they have free shipping on used items until 12/18. So you've got until the 18th for free shipping on any of the used items. They've got the new Yaesu System Fusion Mobile on sale right now for $309.95 and free shipping. I won't mention very many more prices, but let me just say this. They've got a dual band mobile right now for $99.95. Can you believe that? Their phone number is 1-800-221-7735. Now, I'll give that to you in just a minute. But just remember, folks are happy when they deal with R&L Electronics. They're great on service. They're courteous. They get the item out quickly to you. And if you have any problems at all, these folks are right on top of it. Now, once again, their phone number is 1-800-221-7735. 1-800-221-7735. Or go to Google and just Google R&L Electronics. That's R&L Electronics. And mention WTWW when you call. One of the new radio frontiers is Wi-Fi radios. You know, what's a Wi-Fi radio? Well, this is a radio that sits on your desk or wherever you happen to put it. It does not require your computer to listen to radio stations. It's self-contained. It picks up internet by means of Wi-Fi or by means of direct plug-in by Cat5. Once the internet is accessed, this radio has access to 16,000 organized stations, and there's no subscription fee. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the CC Wi-Fi radio. And, you know, fooling with a notebook or a desktop to listen to radio becomes a real pain. It's cumbersome. And the little CC Wi-Fi radio sits on your desk. It's small. It's just like a little radio sitting on your desk. And you program into it what you want to listen to, and it'll give it to you. Or you can surf the dial, get on there, and just start surfing. You'll find things in every country of the world. Like I said, 16,000 organized stations to choose from. Now, this thing has great audio. It can be connected to your stereo system with RCAs, you know, on the back and whatnot. Now, you've got to see this. You've got to see this. You need to go to the C-Crane Company's website at ccrane.com. That's ccrane.com. Now, this thing's got Pandora on it, Live 365, MP3 tunes, has an alarm clock, actually has a Wi-Fi strength signal indicator, and line out for headphone and a headphone jack. So you have line out and a headphone jack. An Ethernet port on the back for instant and secure connection to the Internet. 99 memory presets and a remote control. You've got to see this radio. I don't care what kind of music you like. Jazz, classical, country, southern gospel, oldies, rock and roll, classic rock. It's all on. It's all on the CC Wi-Fi radio. And very easy to select and very, very easy to find. Now, all you have to do is go to seacrane.com. That's seacrane.com. Or better yet, go to WTWW's website and click on the Sea Crane logo. That's right. Just click on that Sea Crane logo. You've been to our website, WTWW.us. Click on that Sea Crane logo and go in there and look and find the CC Wi-Fi radio. Actually, they have several models, so you want to look and see which one you'd like the best, okay? And if you don't have internet access, give them a call. 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. And when you get on the phone, do mention WTWW, because Bob Crane's bringing you Art Bell's Midnight in the Desert, along with a lot of other programming you're listening to on WTWW. So they want to hear that from you. 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. Here we are at WTWW, and we're doing it again at Christmas time. It's Christmas music. We love to play Christmas music at Christmas time on shortwave radio. And what's really cool is when you folks blow the dust off those classic radios and get them out of the closet and get them under the Christmas tree and beside the Christmas tree, and you decorate them up and you tune us in and you listen to the Christmas music on those classic radios. There isn't anything like it. Last year, we ran a promotion. We asked you folks to send in pictures of your classic radios. We're doing it again this year. The grand prize for the winner is from Trans World Antennas, and it's the TW2010 antenna. I mean, this one's decked out. It's got the carry bag with it. It's got the Quadra stand. If you go up to their website and look at twantennas.com or transworldantennas.com and look up the TW2010, you'll see what I'm talking about. But snap a picture of that classic radio. Dress it up. Make a video. Send us a video. Send us a snapshot. Hey, get some pictures of the family near the radio. We want to see people in these pictures, too. That is so cool. And last year, you folks outdone yourself. Well, this year, we're prepared for it because there's going to be prizes, and we're going to have the pictures up on the website. And we just thank you so much for tuning us in and helping us celebrate the season with Christmas music on shortwave radio. Now, once you snap a picture of that classic radio, you want to send it to email at WTWW.us. That's email at WTWW.us. And if you want to send it to us snail mail, you can do that as well. It's WTWW, Post Office Box 102, Lebanon, Tennessee 37088. That's WTWW, Post Office Box 102, Lebanon, Tennessee 37088. We'll be giving those addresses, the email address as well as the snail mail address, out again throughout the entire season. So just keep it tuned and enjoy the Christmas music on WTWW. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO. And now, back to our special guest, the COO of the American Radio Relay League, Harold Kramer.
Let's WJ1B. You met Mr. Jew, you got involved with the company. did you ever think, you know, he would develop another product? And I mean, you got to see the product development, you got to see the ideas, you know, before they became products. But at the rate he's going, this catalog is just full of stuff. I mean, there's all kinds of things. How do you all keep up with that? I mean, this is if he took on a catalog company that handled all kinds of products from other manufacturers, but it's not. It's him. It's you. It's you guys make this stuff. And I mean, yeah, there's so much of it. How did it all come about like that? I mean, there's so many things there. Like antenna analyzers, grid dip meters. I mean, you guys have everything.
You know, when I came in, Ted, it was really interesting because I probably saw the most growth in, you know, at a 21-year period than than anybody else. You know, Phyllis was Phyllis Randall, who's a domestic sales manager, was there for a long time. She's still there, and been, I think she's almost 38 years in the company. But when I came in, we had already had we had Ameritron, which was bought in the 1990s, which was the biggest acquisition. I say that now, but I mean I call that our second company. And then we came in and we bought Mirage quickly after that in 1995. I started working there in 94. And in 96, we bought Vectronics, which was a similar, had a similar product line, but it was a competitive product line at that time. And then in 2000, we bought Hygain, of course. And in 2010, we bought Cushcraft, and things have slowed down a little bit since then, but he's not really, he still wants to buy companies. He still talks about that, but there hasn't been anything that really has piqued his interest, I guess. But, I saw a lot of growth real quick and a lot of products just cranking through crazy, just a crazy amount of speed that was done to increase the product line. Because when I first started, the catalog was a print catalog, like a newspaper type. And then from now we've gone to, full color and 140 pages. And I think that first catalog I worked on was like 40 pages. So we've added 100 pages in 21 years, which is astounding.
Well, how did that come about, though? I mean, like, how you see a product, who thinks these things up, and then who designs them? How does that work?
Well, when I first started, I was lucky to be able to work directly with Mr. Ju. Mr. Ju was the advertising guy, and he still is. He sits right there on my shoulder, and I do the work, and he tells me what to do and move it where. And, we look at, and he's an amazing man. He reads through every sentence, and, we might change it 3 or 4 times before we're done. He gets the ideas from ham radio operators all across the nation. People send in ideas. We have our own ideas, of course. Nowadays, I answer the email, so people email you ideas and tell you, hey, I got this great idea for you, and I want MFJ to have it, I go to the Ham Fest. We listen to people very carefully, because people always come up and tell us, hey, wouldn't it be great if you made this, two radio microphone switch. Okay, so he sits down and he says, okay, I can make that. And he goes and he has like 4 or 5 engineers. Some of them are off-site, and we have one that's on-site now, Ben Stapp. And he works closely with Mr. Ju on some local projects. And there's guys all across the United States, pretty much, that help on some other stuff, like the Ameritron amps, W8JI, Tom Roush does those. And then Harry Wong, who's in Mississippi, he's our software guy. But Mr. Ju is the key engineer. I mean, if he doesn't touch it, it usually probably will not get done, because he has to steer it through the company and get it to production. So he's still the lead guy. He's the lead guy in everything we do. I mean, pretty fascinating.
Well, I was going to say, because I mean, I'm looking at these things and I thought, who thinks of this? I remember a long time ago seeing this artificial ground, where you can put 100 feet of wire out and tune it and pretend it's ground, and the radio thinks it's ground. And, it's a good thing for people who are living on the fifth floor of a building somewhere,
And Ted, that is also being used to evaluate how good of a formal ground system that you have, because then that artificial ground would not need to add anything, if you will, to the circuit. So it's also a little bit of a test instrument as well.
Well, the antenna.
I'll never forget, Ted, that when Mr. Ju lived in my neighborhood for the longest time. I thought, well, here's my boss. He's living in my neighborhood. This is the medium income deal, But I went to help him move, which, you know, he being the boss, he said, well, help me move to my new house. And so I did. And I remember there were wires everywhere. Radio stuff is all through his house. You know, here was this nice house in our little Green Oaks community, and just radio wires were everywhere. So he is an experimenter. He plays with the stuff. And you mentioned about Frank not being a CW man, or Frank said that, but Mr. Jew is. You know, he's a 40-meter CW guy. I've actually talked to people who have talked to him on the air and been surprised by, you know, hearing his call and say, oh, what is K5 flu? Okay, that's him, you know. But he's operating some of this stuff at his home and tinkering around at the office also.
Well, that's usually how it is. Most people that are really into radio, they work all day long in radio. They come home, they're still playing in radio. It's like it doesn't ever go away, you know. So,
exactly.
Well, you know, as you travel across the country, of course, you run into a lot of radio amateurs. And I want to cover this because I think this is something we need to address. Now, Frank, you're going to have to get really deeply involved in this because of your sociology background. He's got an extensive sociology background, and when it comes to statistics and data and all that kind of stuff. So my question,
well, I know that because my daughter is now working at the place where Frank used to work at.
I guess
she's got her master's degree there. Yeah.
Okay, so you see this business MFJ, and of course this kind of applies to all amateur radio businesses that are manufacturing or whatnot. But let's look at MFJ, because MFJ still produces a catalog. Well, we're going to talk about this a little later, because I go back to the days where there used to be, and now, Richard, you may not be old enough to remember this, but there used to be a Lafayette radio catalog and a Allied radio catalog, and there used to be Olson radio catalogs, Heathkit radio catalogs, and these were like dream books. I mean, this is what hams, especially young hams, you know. I remember going into the ARRL handbooks, ARRL, see if I can talk tonight. Going to those handbooks and going to the back and looking at the ads, you know, of all the boat anchors now, of course. But let's talk about economics from the standpoint, and Frank, I want you to chime in on this, because we've heard, and this has been told over and over again, hams are cheap. Okay. I mean, that's like a blanket statement, you know. Hams are cheap, so the question I have is, how does a business survive developing products and develop and marketing them to these cheap ham radio operators?
Is that was to me first or Frank first?
Well, either way, I figure you could start, and then Frank will back you up with statistics, or Frank, you can start.
Frank can elaborate.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, in some of my discussions with some dealers and other big companies and ARRL, the magazine and so on, we consider hams not really cheap. I mean, there are cheap hams, and there are hams that like to spend a lot of money. And even the cheap hams are spending lots and lots of money on their hobby. Nothing in this hobby is really cheap. I mean, even MFJ, who is known as the low-cost kind of guy, our distributor, our lowest-priced product, say you're just a dry dummy load for 300 watts, that's $39.95 plus tax. So you're looking at $42 plus shipping, and that's not cheap. I'm an old soccer coach and baseball coach, and I would spend all kinds of money on my kids and stuff like that. But $40 was a lot of money to the most average guy. And but some of our equipment is right there. And then when you start talking about automatic tuners at $769, I mean, and amplifiers at almost, you know, the prices of those are getting up to $4,000 now. So I don't, a lot of people in the industry, you know, like to say that hams are cheap, and some guys are. They really are. They come up and they want a discount on everything. But in the majority, people are spending a lot of money out there. No questions asked. Frank, maybe you can elaborate on that.
Well, you know, let me hit it two ways. One, very specific, and then maybe a little broader context. There are a lot of areas where people, you know, non-hams, say they're one thing. But that's what they say. If you watch their behavior, they can be very different. And the other thing you have to keep in mind is that for all the rhetoric about hams being cheap, and I have repeated that as well, not all of them are cheap. For example, Kenwood, their top-of-the-line transceiver, the 990S, is, you know, what, about 8,000, depending on how many bells and how many whistles that you get. Well, they don't make just two of those. You know, they have to have enough of those going out the door. So you've got a range of expenditure levels, and yet you've got the shoestring person. And it may be that the folks who get into it are at the shoestring level, but let's give it another spin, Ted. It's a lot cheaper than golf, fishing, or hunting.
Yeah, how much does it cost to go to a golf course and play an 18 round of golf?
Well, it sort of depends. Now you can go to a public course and you can pay $50 and walk, or you can spend upwards of $100 and ride and have a chicken sandwich and you know, those kind of things. However,
yeah,
if you want to be a member of, say, the Jackson Country Club, which is generally thought of as the nicest country club in the state of Mississippi, it's about $20,000 just to join. And then there's a minimum fee. So, you know, and then you look at bass boats, and I'm not getting down on anybody that, you know, goes to Bass Pro Shop and spends a lot of money on a bass boat and all that good stuff. My only point is that amateur radio can be as expensive as you want. If you look at Tim Duffy, who has DX Engineering, he has a station where, you know, if he hasn't spent a $500,000 to $1 million, then he hasn't spent a dime. I mean, and so you've got these small echelon of people that spend a lot of money. Okay, now let's come back to Mr. Jew. Martin is someone who early on in his career, he would, if you will, bum a ride to the Hamfest like Dayton and others, and he would show up in a car that you might think he picked up, you know, at a salvage auction on the way to Dayton. But Martin's a very shrewd man. He had a new car. His wife Betty was driving it. He wasn't. So that move to the nicest neighborhood in Starkville, you know, was when their daughter was sort of coming of age, and those kind of family type things kind of kick in. And so he lives in what, Richard, it's been a while since I've lived in Starkville, but I would think the neighborhood that Martin lives in would reputationally be thought of as certainly among the nicest neighborhoods in Starkville.
My mama lives over there now, and it's Sherwood Forest, and it's a good neighborhood. But of course, Dan Mullen's not in there now, so that's the head coach of the Mississippi State University football program. But
spend money. You know, he's kind of known reputationally as a tightwad, if you will. But if you're around Martin at a ham fest and you go out to eat with him, you will not pay for your meal. I mean, Martin is very good, you know, about that. He just doesn't build the Tim Duffy style, you know, contest station. He collects older radios. He just bought a Mosley CM1. Off of eBay. I think it went for about $350, and he was complaining about the $25 shipping. So, you know, Ted, it's the kind of thing that, if it's a good analogy, Richard, MFJ Enterprises is a little bit like the Walmart of retail. They carry a lot of things, and they have an absolutely, no matter what, you don't like the color, it doesn't smell like you want it to smell, we will take it back. No questions asked for a certain period of time.
But you know what?
Guarantee. You're right.
Yeah, you know, let me tell you something, though. I disagree. I'm a radio engineer. Been a radio engineer all my life. All I do is work on big transmitters, okay? So I think I have... I'm not overly qualified, but I squeak with a little qualification. I think that the whole deal that, you know, MFJ is like Walmart type, you know, it, I'll say this, you know, Sam Walton said, stack them high, sell them cheap, okay? And that's what he did, and that was his basis. He would buy 50,000, you know, widgets or whatever for one store, and even though it was a major brand name, he'd beat them down to the point where they were selling them just so close to their margin, and then that was what he did. He stacked them high, and he sold them cheap, and the American public got hooked on that, okay? But now let's talk about quality for a second. I've got an electronic keyer here, an MFJ electronic keyer that I got for Christmas. A friend of mine purchased this keyer for me, and I've got the MFJ paddle, okay? And I've been all over the Hamfests. I've been all over the Hamfests when I've had a chance and go and I, you know, go to a booth and sit down and start playing with a key and a keyer. I've been to friends' houses where they've had some of these, what they consider to be esoteric, top-of-the-line, you know, keyers and paddles and stuff. And I can tell you that the MFJ keyer and paddle will keep up with anything else that's out there in my book, okay?
Oh, yeah.
The grid dip meter.
That was a solid product.
The grid dip meter that you guys make, I've got one of those. I've got several frequency counters. We've got several antenna analyzers. And I've been to radio stations, FM stations, where the MFJ analyzer is the only thing that will see the antenna because other radio stations in the area are putting out signals, and these expensive analyzers do not have the ability to reject the signal coming back down the antenna. And it causes the analyzer to do weird things. The MFJ analyzer, you put it on, screw the coax into it, turn it on, and you have a faithful set of numbers there that you can take to the bank. So I guess I'm going to back up and say I don't buy this business when people say MFJ stands for Mighty Fine Junk or whatever. Don't buy it. I think that there's some things that you guys make that are in an economic range. I think you've targeted your audience, and so it's not necessarily what you'd consider to be top of the line, but it's very functional. But for the most part, the products don't fit into that category. For the most part, the products fit into a quality category, and they work. And then when you look at the fact that you guys will service the customer, and you take the things back if something isn't right, you know, I just don't see that. I think hams are curmudgeons and they have to have something to complain about, you know, but I'm going to blow the lid off of this, Frank. I'm telling you,
I'm talking about different things. Say for me, Walmart doesn't mean cheap. It doesn't mean shoddy. You know, so don't read that into what I was saying. What I was using the Walmart metaphor for was two things. One, they have the broadest range of items of any amateur radio vendor in the world. If I recall, Richard, about 2,000, 90%.
Yeah, we're over 2,000 products, yes, sir.
Yeah, so 2,000 is an easy number to substantiate. So over 2,000, 90% are manufactured or assembled. If you buy a vacuum tube from China, you know, you didn't make that part. So, and there's some imports, again, 90% U.S. made, manufactured right in Starkville. So all that is a very positive thing. But now, Ted, now let's go after what you were talking about, a little bit of that Mighty Fine Junk. And I have been very outspoken on places like EHAM. If you've got facts, call up Richard Stubbs and rip him a new one.
Well, let me say this too.
That's his job. But if you're selling BS, present the facts, because I call it Mississippi's finest jewel.
Okay, that's good, but I'm going to blow the lid off of something here. I'm telling you, I'm ready to go. Are you ready for this now? You ready for this? Okay, here's the deal.
Ready, I'm ready, Ted.
The whole thing that hams are cheap is a subterfuge, okay? Now, this very, very well-designed thing, and probably came from the same line of thinking that the Wolfong came from, okay? If we circulate, and it has been circulated, that hams are cheap, okay, this keeps the XYLs, the girlfriends, and all of those people at bay. Because if hams are cheap, there is no way in the world you can explain the price tag on a lot of these radios that these guys have. And they don't just have one. They'll have two or three. And every accessory you can think of. And when you add up how much they've spent on ham radio... You know, and the other thing is, you know, and I don't mind making fun of other hobbies, because I hear all these people say, "Oh, you're into that ham radio stuff." Yeah, I know what that is. The old man in the basement and all that, you know. So I don't mind getting on the radio and saying, "What? What do you do for fun? Collect stamps? You collect stamps for fun?" Okay, so anyways, there you go. I just blew the lid off of both of those things. And I believe that, what is it now? I can't think of the terminology. I was going to pull that off, and I can't. That thing that that Frank talks about, socially something. Anyhow, I really believe that's true. I think the fact that the whole thing about hams being cheap are just crazy. It's a crazy thing, you know. But anyhow, I think
you're right, though. I mean, they probably started that way back when, so their wives would think, well, he's in that cheap ham radio business, so no big deal. And that was a good thing to pull off way back when, you know, when the wives were around.
So anyways,
I hear people talk about that all the time when they come up to buy something. Well, my wife won't find out if I take back this little thing. I'll sneak in the bigger thing in the back door, you know.
Hey, Richard, how often do you ship it to a different address, i.e. you send it to their buddy's house so they can go over and pick it up and the wife?
I really don't think that happens that much, but, I mean, you know, you do get occasionally some of that.
I've actually been the front for a friend of mine once. So,
well, no, how it's done, Frank, it's simple. It's just very, very simple. You just say, "Sweetie, I bought this Ameritron AL1200. You wouldn't believe the deal I got on this." See, you know, and then you just come up. I got this thing for $300. I mean, I couldn't resist. I mean, do you realize what these go for?
Let's go down this path.
The greatest thing now, guys, though, is when the guy brings his wife with him and he says, "Well, honey, do you think I'd get that?" You know, and he's talking about a 1306, perhaps, Ted. And she says, "Well, sure, honey, do whatever you want." But, of course, she was going to get whatever she wants later, too, you know?
There you go.
let's go down that road, because I think, given that we have the person who is the coordinator or director of customer service, I know of no other amateur radio manufacturer who would have their customer service director, you know, be on a broadcast show like this. And so I think it's a real unique opportunity. And as I'd said before, I've kind of been not an apologist for any rhetoric about quality control. What I've done is I want to insist on facts. And so I want to explore this with Richard. Richard, tell us a little bit about what's your day like? And I know it varies a great deal. But what's your day like as director of customer service? What do you do? I mean, what happens?
Well, you know, I'll go back to Mr. Jew's old line. He says, when I first started working there, we don't have managers, because I was getting some business cards made and I put manager on there. And he said, "No, we don't have managers. Everybody's just a person. Everybody does whatever we want them to do." But, you know, I thought, you know, at the time I thought, well, isn't that something? You know, I don't even have a job title. But at the bottom line, it really is whatever they want me to do. If they want me to help move chairs around, or, you know, they're paying me. So I do whatever it takes. I've been the book guy. I've been the commercial accounts manager. I've been the customer service manager. So what that really means, Ted, is I answer all the customer complaints. So if I'm not around and somebody takes a note, they leave it on my desk and say, hey, this guy needs you to call or whatever. But, you know, it can range from anything from something simple like we shipped the wrong item, or the guy's got something and he reverse polarized it. And I had that call today, actually. Somebody smoked a 1020C, an active antenna, because they didn't have our power cube, and they put their power cube into it. And, of course, the reverse polarity, they smoked it. We had that. We had, you know, I had a lady with my favorite call of all time was a lady called me. She said, my husband was cussing this thing. And he said, I'm gonna throw it in the trash. And so she threw it in the trash, and actually threw it in the big trash, and got it knocked it out. So then she calls me a day later, and she says, my husband wants that thing back. So I'm calling about your no matter what warranty. Well, no matter what warranty does mean you got to have some kind of product, you know, to return. But you know, you were talking about Mighty Fine Junk, Ted. You know, I hear that all the time. But a lot of people just say that as a little funny, but also they say it almost like it's heartfelt, like it's a good thing. And I, you know, so many years ago when I first started hearing it, I was like, man, I'm mad at these guys. I want to punch them in the face, you know. And Mr. G would say the same thing. Sometimes you got to punch them in the face. But you know, now I just think I don't see those guys. Where are they? If I go to the Ham Fest in Huntsville, Alabama, and there's, I don't know, 5,000 people that come through, I don't see a single one of those people that cusses out on eHam. Or, you know, some of that constructive criticism is not constructive at all, like Frank's talking about. They just say whatever. It's because they're jealous or because they're a company, or I don't know. But the people I talk to are all very nice. As long as I take care of my business. You know, a guy gets the wrong thing shipped, I ship him the right thing. I send him a call tag. We pick up the wrong thing and take care of it. You know, so I don't hear from those people. I don't know where they are. I don't know where they live. Probably under a rock somewhere. You know.
Well, you know, let me liven that up a little bit with a couple of specific examples because I think our listeners would benefit by knowing. You know, amateur radio is probably like, not unlike anyway, being a car dealer. And car dealers get all kinds of customers. Well, you know, ham radio manufacturers and resellers get all kinds of customers. I think places like eHam, probably less on QRZ, eHam is kind of like down on the corner where you're kind of hanging with the fellows. And there's a whole lot of blowing and saying things that have little connection to reality. There are a couple of folks
about all kinds of subjects, Frank. I mean, just not just amateur radio, just weird
stuff. You bet. But for example, one person on the EM had a watt meter. It was 35 years old. It had been out of production, Ted, for over 20 years. So something happened to it, and he called up and he wanted to get it repaired. Well, you think about it. So you had a customer who's got one of your earlier watt meters. I mean, an early watt meter. Hey, can you fix this? Well, you've got someone who takes calls for all kinds of things, sales calls, tech support calls. No, you got to call Meritron. They're a whopping 6 miles away or 4 miles away. You know, that kind of traffic. And so what's she going to say? Oh, no, we can't fix that. Well, we'll be glad to take a look at it. So it gets packed up and sent in. All right, so what does the tech person do? And you hear this all the time. MFJ has no quality control. And, Rich, I want you to follow up when I'm done here about whether you have quality control or not.
Let me jump in just real quick here and say also, if you would like to ask Richard a question, you can send us an email, and the email address is simple. It's just email, the word email, at wtww.us. That's email at
WTWW.us. That'd be cool. If you got some question for Richard, we'd just love to hear from you. Okay, go ahead.
That would be great. So what's a tech person do? They get a watt meter that they haven't, the company has not manufactured in, say, 20 years. Well, they look at the thing. They try to figure out what's wrong with it. They do some diagnostic tests. From my visits to the MFJ factories, every technician's got whatever he or she needs. And not all of them are he, by the way. So they go, okay, so this part's bad or that part's bad. We no longer have that part. Well, who has it? So it gets put in a box, and you start querying the marketplace to see if you can find a resistor that nobody made, now, or this, that, or the other. So some time goes by because these parts sourcing places can be very challenging. So the bottom line is, at the end of the period, the technician says, we can't repair it. And so they ship it back to this person. Well, then he gets on EHAM, and it's like the movie Broadcast News, and the guy who got out on the balcony who said, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. So he gets on EHAM, and all the other buddies are hanging out there. I wouldn't take it. I wouldn't put up with that. Boy, that's mighty fine junk. That's just terrible. You mean they wouldn't repair that? Well, I'll tell you what you ought to do. You ought to go to Dayton and get you some T-shirts made up, and you ought to go around and march, and you ought to just really stir up a big mess. We'll teach that Martin Jew something. And so, I kind of said, wow, you're going to do that? Well, guess what? I'm concerned about the customer care you've got. I happen to take it upon myself and call Richard Stubbs and ask him, what would happen if you did a demonstration? Well, I think Richard's comment politely was, well, they have security there for a reason. So I kind of put it back on the person. Well, he got totally inflamed at me. I'm the bad guy. I'm stirring up stuff. I was doing that as a sociologist, Ted, because I wanted to play that little script back on him. And, it's sad because if I had to fault MFJ, I would say they simply tried to help somebody that they should have said what Yaesu says, what ICOM says, what Kenwood says. We no longer service that product. Best of luck to you. But yet, they bend over backwards about three times to help someone out who says he has a sentimental attachment to a watt meter that's, 25 years old or something. Now, to me, that's kind of the example. Yeah, that's the example of where, from a business point of view, you can hurt yourself by trying to help others. Ted...
Yeah,
Ted, I want to admit this on the air. I've been a customer of MFJ since 1979. And when I got my PhD, I bought myself a Yaesu shortwave radio. It was the first real shortwave receiver I ever had. And I bought a 1020, that same active antenna that Richard said some guy plugged in the wrong polarity and zapped it. I bought one of those. And I also bought a dual channel audio filter. Right, and so I've been a customer since 1979, and I bought a power supply from Richard. I was in Starkville, and I go up, and one of my former honor students is my eye doctor, and so I travel up to Starkville, and I'll usually visit MHA. So I bought one, I got it home, and by George, there was a little small eighth of an inch screw missing. I was so mad. I wanted to call Richard up and just really let him have it. Except I thought, I'd have to go back in the house and get the phone. I just took two steps, got one out of my junk box, put it in. Power supply was great. Anyway, Ted, that's my take on MFJ and what they try to do for their customers.
Well, and I will say this. If someone is psychologically sentimental about a watt meter and it's not working, I will guarantee you, if you call MFJ, Richard would be happy to give that person a little counseling and a little direction and a little empathy over the sentimental attachment to the watt meter. And you're not going to get that anywhere else. I know that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, You can call us directly and talk to a human person. It may take you a while to get through the phone line, but there is going to be somebody on the other end for sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO, and we'll be right back with our special guest, Richard Stubbs from MFJ Enterprises, right after this. Now, the last thing you want to do is run out of shopping days before Christmas. There's no need to do that. All you got to do is go to one website. That's R&L Electronics. If you're thinking ham radio, you're buying for a ham or buying for yourself at Christmas time, why not? R&L Electronics. Now listen, go to their website and look at what they've got. Talk about ideas. They've got towers, radio accessories. They have HF radios, VHF radios, UHF radios. They've got power supplies. They've got connectors. They've got coax and cable. They've got books on amateur radio. They've got amateur radio tuners, antenna tuners, I should say, automatic and manual. They've got antenna mounts. They've got all sorts of antenna accessories, along with antennas themselves. And they also have big amplifiers, and they have medium-sized amplifiers, and they've got preamps, and they've got used equipment, and they've got all the major brand names like Kenwood, Yaesu, ICOM, Alinco, you name it. It's all there at R&L Electronics. Now, another thing, they carry used items. Radios that have been previously owned that are in mint condition, and they have free shipping on used items until 12/18. So you've got until the 18th for free shipping on any of the used items. They've got the new Yaesu System Fusion Mobile on sale right now for $309.95. and free shipping. I won't mention very many more prices, but let me just say this. They've got a dual band mobile right now for $99.95. Can you believe that? Their phone number is 1-800-221-7735. Now, I'll give that to you in just a minute. But just remember, folks are happy when they deal with R&L Electronics. They're great on service. They're courteous. They get the item out quickly to you. And if you have any problems at all, these folks are right on top of it. Now, once again, their phone number is 1-800-221-7735. 1-800-221-7735. Or go to Google and just Google R&L Electronics. That's R&L Electronics. And mention WTWW when you call. You've heard us talk about the CC Skywave radio. And the only way you can do this radio justice is you have to hold one in your hand. You have to own it. You have to be able to take it out in the backyard or take it, slip it in your pocket as you travel around. It's a beautiful travel radio. Probably the best travel radio that you could possibly ever want to own. Okay, it's got AM on it, a very hot AM radio section. FM, FM stereo. It's got Weather Alert Plus. It's also got the shortwave bands, 2.3 to 26.1 megahertz continuous tuning. And it also has the air aviation band. You have direct entry of frequencies and plus auto scan and store. Can you believe that? A lighted LCD display. Selectable fast or fine tuning on all bands except weather. There are 400 memory presets on this radio, and it runs on two AA alkaline batteries, all right, and it runs forever. There's a stereo headphone jack and a fold-out backstand. Of course, you've seen those. The clock with 12 or 24-hour format. The alarm that's on it as well. And there's a rotary volume knob, which is kind of cool. I hate the knobs you have to push on them, you know, and turn the volume up and down. It comes with high-quality CC buds, the earphones, and a carrying case along with a one-year warranty. Now, you can order the Skywave radio right now. To order, all you have to do is call 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863, or visit them at ccrane.com. You have to mention WTWW. And the reason why we want you to do that is Bob Crane wants to know that you're supporting him as he brings you Midnight in the Desert, the Art Bell Show, as well as some of the music programming we have here on WTWW. Once again, the phone number, 1-800-522-8863. That's 522-8863. Or go to ccrane.com and be sure and mention WTWW. Here we are at WTWW, and we're doing it again at Christmas time. It's Christmas music. We love to play Christmas music at Christmas time on shortwave radio. And what's really cool is when you folks blow the dust off those classic radios and get them out of the closet and get them under the Christmas tree and beside the Christmas tree, and you decorate them up and you tune us in and you listen to the Christmas music on those classic radios. There isn't anything like it. Last year, we ran a promotion. We ask you folks to send in pictures of your classic radios. We're doing it again this year. The grand prize for the winner is from Trans World Antennas, and it's the TW2010 antenna. I mean, this one's decked out. It's got the carry bag with it. It's got the Quadra stand. If you go up to their website and look at twantennas.com or transworldantennas.com and look up the TW2010, you'll see what I'm talking about. But snap a picture of that classic radio. Dress it up. Make a video. Send us a video. Send us a snapshot. Hey, get some pictures of the family near the radio. We want to see people in these pictures, too. That is so cool. And last year, you folks outdone yourself. Well, this year, we're prepared for it because there's going to be prizes, and we're going to have the pictures up on the website. And we just thank you so much for tuning us in and helping us celebrate the season with Christmas music on shortwave radio. Now, once you snap a picture of that classic radio, you want to send it to email at WTWW.us. That's email at WTWW.us. And if you want to send it to us snail mail, you can do that as well. It's WTWW, Post Office Box 102, Lebanon, Tennessee 37088. That's WTWW, Post Office Box 102, Lebanon, Tennessee 37088. We'll be giving those addresses, the email address as well as the snail mail address, out again throughout the entire season. So just keep it tuned and enjoy the Christmas music on WTWW. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO. It's all about ham radio, and we're going to get right back to our guest right now, Richard Stubbs from MFJ Enterprises.
I gave a tour yesterday to a New York guy who had come down to visit a Alabama ham, a friend of his, and I'd known this guy for a long time from Birmingham, and he was amazed. You know, he's a 70-something-year-old guy, like most of our customers, and we've toured the building, and Frank was mentioning about quality. So I take these customers through the building, and I show them everything. I mean, we don't have anything to hide. I take them through the building. I show them each line. I show them what's going on there, how everything's being put together. And as Frank had mentioned about the women, you know, women are, I guess we hire, there's no doubt, we have more women working for us than men. That's why I'm running for my life most of the time in there, but because of my good looks and sexy voice. But anyway, and touring the line, and I show them how the PC boards are put together, and then we test them in the PC board format by wire clipping all these wires into this metal chassis and even putting a meter to it. And we got a bird meter there that we calibrate to, and you treat it like it's inside the metal cabinet. So the meter board, I mean, the PC board is tested first, and then it goes back to a second test. When you put it through the metal cabinet, it comes back to a different guy, and he tested again to make sure. So it's a double whammy, And then there's finally a quality inspection by their own production supervisor who, if you mess up in there, you don't want to mess up because he gets on to you pretty hard. But God bless him. He's got a job that he's got to keep all these lines together and 2,000 different products going out the door in a correct fashion. So rarely, like Frank said, I mean, you know, we're human. This is a human company. Even though we have machines, we have surface mount machines. They're fancy. Frank's seen them. One day, I hope, Ted, you'll get to see it, that picks up all these little small parts and puts them into the little tiny holes and then even solders them. And then we have a wave solder machine that solders everything. And so when I hear people talk about cold solder joints or an intermittent solder joint, I say, wait a minute, a machine did that, you know. And when then we second test those things and then test them again. So they usually come out pretty good. Now, do we miss a screw sometimes? Do we miss we can miss anything. We might miss putting jumpers in there that on some units that require jumpers. But we're talking some tiny little things that are smaller than your little pinky fingernail. So easy to do when you're a human related business like we are. In manufacturing, you're going to mess up, but as long as you take care of your mess ups, then that's the whole deal. Interestingly, Frank, there was a great QRZ forum that I meant to pass on to you, but only because one of my customers sent it to me, a link that he was talking about excellent MFJ customer service. Well, about 40 some odd people came in there. You're going to have to look at it tomorrow. You know, saying how great we were. So it was real interesting to see that, whereas you're usually used to seeing, you know, getting ganged up on for no reason at all.
Well, and what you get is the cattle call. That is, you don't have a true cross-sectional sample of all customers. I, as you know, Richard and Ted, I'm not sure if you know this or not, but you know, I'm a cancer survivor. I had tongue cancer. Ted, you'll be interested to know I had a third of my tongue removed. It was rebuilt from tissue from my left wrist. Well, you bet I got on the internet and I checked into these cancer forums, and I quickly checked out because I was dead yesterday if you read all that stuff, you know, in a cancer forum. Mm. So what happens with internet-based websites? And it's the same thing for Amazon or, you know, a lot of the other retailers in other markets. You tend to get a skew, either a halo effect or you get, I don't know what would be good to call it, but the devil's horns. And I think to some degree, you know, there is that, because I'll see a lot of folks on EHAM justify their opinion because of similar opinions of others. And I go back through mm-hmm. them. And I don't see any facts. What I've done, Ted, is I had a program written that read EHAM's entire website of product reviews, and it scraped every review. I think it was through sometime in 2014. So I have every review of every product or service, book or what have you, on EHAM in a database, and I'm doing some statistical analysis on that, and we'll talk about the results when they're ready. But I'm going to get to the bottom of, you know, this kind of rhetoric, and I don't know what the results are going to be, but I'll be surprised if MFJ is very much different than a lot of other manufacturers. The other thing that you have to keep in mind, let's just take two car dealers. Let's take Ford and Chevy. What if Ford made 100 cars and Chevy made 10? Now, you know, that's not exactly a Meritron versus Alpha in the amplifier world, but the point, I think, stands on its own. Who do you think is going to have fewer goof ups? Well, it's probably going to be the one that's more artisan produced. And guess who's got a price tag that's two or three fold for the same class of product? So a lot of people don't think about that. And I don't know whether there's a regional kind of thing or not. You know, Mr. Jew's comment when he speaks is, you know, I want to clear up one thing right now is, all you're thinking, why doesn't he talk like he looks? And he has a Southern drawl about like I do, except perhaps even a little more accentuated. And yet he is of Chinese descent. I see some what I consider pretty racist slurs about MFJ and some problem. And it's just another Chinese company ripping off Americans. And I respond, you know, wait a minute. If someone is of Chinese descent, but they've been to China one time. Why? Because to take his daughter so she could see the Great Wall. Why? Because everybody in her class wanted to know what the Great Wall looked like, as if she knew. Martin Zhu is a native of the Delta in Mississippi, and yes, he's traveled, but you know, he is not from China in that sense of the word. His great grandfather worked on the Transcontinental Railroad. And then his son settled in the Delta, and they got in the grocery business, as did many Chinese families who settled in the Delta. And so Martin Zhu himself is a great American entrepreneur, just as much as, and don't laugh, Donald Trump claims to be, although he was an immigrant, his father was from another country. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff bound up in those Zham reviews, but Ted is a statistician. I'm on the hunt to get to the bottom of it. So,
well, let me tell you an interesting story. My very first live broadcast from Dayton, Ohio, on shortwave, we're at the QSO booth, we're on live, and someone said, okay, we're going to go get Martin Zhu. I said, oh, that's cool. I mean, I'd heard of Martin Zhu. I had seen pictures of Martin Zhu. And Martin looks Chinese. I mean, he does. When you look at him, you'd immediately know what his ethnic background is without any question. Okay? So he comes over to the booth and sits down. And like everyone else, you know, here I am stereotyping. I'm expecting broken English, you know, Chinese accent and whatnot. And I said, here is our friend Martin Zhu from MFJ, and how are you today? And what I was expecting to come out of his mouth sounded more like this. He said, well, hello, Ted. I'm just glad to be able to come over here and sit down at your booth. You know, it blew me away. I mean, I was like, wait a minute, man. And of course, the more the conversation went on, the more interesting it became, because I realized within just a matter of a few seconds that I was talking to a genius, you know, a very well-educated, very broad background individual that was basically up on everything, but the last thing he sounded was Chinese. That was absolutely for sure.
And Ted, you would be calling him Dr. Zhu, except he had a business that took off and he didn't finish that dissertation.
Really?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. 1977, the tuners started coming around, the manual tuners. It's the first little one was that eggshell white one with the blue cover, back when we used to have our metal done at Tintec. And he had to quit MSU teaching electrical engineering, and he had to give up his doctorate. He was working on a dissertation and he gave it up because the company became way too much. And back then, we're talking probably 20 employees total, counting himself, you know. So he had to give it up and go full-time at MFJ.
Well, that was, I'll tell you, the first interview I did with him was amazing, you know. And I will have to say that, you know, after being in the radio business a long, long time, there's not too many things that I guess I want to say kind of bowl me over, so to speak. But my interview with him the very first time just left me, you know, with my mouth open, because and it wasn't even the issue that he didn't sound Chinese. It was the fact that this man had such a background and was very, I want to say, quietly articulate, you know, and there wasn't any kind of, you know, where someone sits down and you ask him a question and they're uninformed, you know, and you have to back up a little bit and go down a different road because you've asked a question that they can't answer. I mean, there was nothing that I asked this man that he did not have the background on. And
the first time, yeah, the first time I met him and interviewed with him. And then even to this day, when I walk into his office, I feel like I'm going before the grasshopper. And maybe you all know what I'm talking about, like David Carradine.
Yes, in Kung Fu.
Kung Fu shows, yeah. Because he's the all-knowing, you know, he's it. He is the boss. He knows everything. He knows what you've been doing. He knows when you've gone to the bathroom. He knows, you know, whatever. He is the man. So he's very sharp, and I remember respecting him a whole lot by whenever I'd go to my parents. They lived out on the highway, out on the Highway 25, Frank, and I'd have to go by the factory all the time, and I'd say, oh, well, there's Mr. Jew working, and we'd be coming back at 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning and seeing him up there working. And that was during the, you know, during the heyday, really, when I first started working there. But even the heyday was actually before that, you know, when Hamfest were king. But he was always busy. He's been always putting the money back into the corporation. And for that, I'm very appreciative, because I've had a job for 21 years now. So,
well, see, one thing, and it's a subtle thing. How many companies would allow you to walk in and someone, perhaps even the founder and CEO, give you a guided tour, as Richard said, with nothing to hide? I don't know any that would allow that, except by a very special circumstance. Tentec used to do it when they hosted a Hamfest. That's number one. Number two, when you see the videos like George Thomas and others have done, and you look at these tables that are plywood and 2x4 legs and what have you, and people go, huh, wow, boy, it looks like a dump. Well, wait a minute. There's a very popular commercial here in the Jackson, Mississippi market for a dentist office, and they make a real point. You're not coming here for dental service to pay for a huge fish tank in the waiting room. You're coming here for dental service, and we focus on that. And so what Martin does is that, whether it's a granite countertop or some sort of Formica composite slick-looking workbench, or it's what he has, the difference is where the money is focused upon. And I think, Richard, it was the 40th anniversary celebration, that the only way you would know from the street that was MFJ Enterprises is a small orange plastic tag that was screwed into a cement parking bumper that said, parking space for K5FLU. And you'd have to be a ham to know what that meant. I think it was the 40th anniversary before they put a sign on the building.
Yeah, we gave that bumper parking to Mr. Jew after he had his quadruple bypass. So a couple of us guys got together and got with Rick, the sign man from Baton Rouge, and got him a sign and got him his own parking space. Because before that, he would, you know, he's a 10:30 man. He's not an early guy. He's a late guy. So he would come in and not find a parking spot. He'd have to park real far around the corner and have to walk all the way to the door. So after he had his surgery, we got him a place right up front, and it says K5 Flu Reserve Parking. So that was a good thing for Mr. Jew, but something he deserved all of his life, but he never asked for it. So
that's an amazing characteristic for a founder and CEO. To have never insisted that he have his own parking place. His employees did that after he had a serious heart problem.
And not to mention, you know, he also, like you talked about his cars and stuff, you know, the company car has always been his car. So he lets people drive his car over to get the mail or whatever. But, yeah, the guy, he's always been fascinating, and it's been a pleasure to work for him for 21 years. And I learned an awful lot about business and taking care of customers. He always told me, he says, don't let any hams get out of here. If I'm here, I want to meet them. And so when I give the tours, you know, like Frank said, traditionally Mr. Jew has given tours also, but he kind of gave that up to me several years ago. But you know, if he was here on a Saturday afternoon working and some ham showed up, he would stop everything and give the guy a tour right there, you know, around the factory. And he said, you know, we're here to roll the red carpet out. So when I got finished with the tour the other day for the New York guy and the Alabama guy, I said, oh, wait a minute, Mr. Jew's here now. So he was in, he had his door closed, but I knocked on it. You know, Randy was in there. They were talking some high business or whatever, but he said, oh, no, come on in, come on in. So he sat down with those guys and for at least 10 minutes while I was waiting on them, and they were ringing up, and I was putting together some orders for them. So, but he talked to them for at least 10 minutes. I just wanted to pick their brain or just say hello and, you know, be nice to them. That's the whole key.
You know, I was going to say something, too. He's Martin Jew has a very interesting personality. Not that we're just sitting here talking about the gentleman. He's probably, we're talking behind his back or whatever. Anyways, but he has a very, very inquisitive mind, and he's interested in all manner of subjects. He's a night owl. I didn't know this. He was talking to me, and he told me several times, and I've heard Frank mention that he's up late at night listening to the Art Bell Show as he's working, listening to Art. And you have to really have an inquisitive mind. And you know, when you're listening to all the different subject matter that Art Bell has on. We also found out he's a Dave Ramsey fan. I've got my younger son works for Dave Ramsey. He's Dave's chief engineer. So, see, here's a fellow that's very well-rounded. Now, before we go any further, we've got some David here has been catching some emails. So we'll start him out just real quickly and get back to the subject. You had some folks here that wanted to say hello, and I don't know what.
We've got let's see here, going through the email. Sorry, we've got David, we've got Richard, Mark. Kenneth, these people are all just they're emailing in and just saying hello. Glad to hear you.
What cities are they in?
This gentleman here was in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We're getting some from New York and Washington as well.
Yeah, let me go down this list here just real quick. We've got Terrell in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm not going to read off call signs. Matter of fact, I'm not going to give last names either, because sometimes that causes a problem. Well, we had some people really get upset with us. Said, you gave my call sign out, and I got these emails. Okay, Richard in Irvine, California. Hello to, let's see here. Lisa is listening in Marsing, Idaho, and she's saying hello to you, Richard. Janet in Tacoma, Washington is listening, says that she loves this show and wants to say hello to Richard Stubbs. Let's see here. John.
Richard, I think she saw your picture on my blog post. I think that's what's going on.
So you saw that bearded guy in the catalog.
Yeah. And then here, John is in Nyack, New York. John in Wayne, New Jersey, saying hello, Richard. Of course, he says the signal's coming in real good and all that sort of thing, but he's saying hello, appreciate MFJ. So there's more here, but I'm gonna let David read some questions. I don't want to slight anybody, but we got to get kind of.
All right, here we go. We've got Keith from Houston, Texas. He says he's been thinking of getting the Ameritron HF screwdriver for his car. He's seen several mounting styles from on the side of the car to the middle of the trunk and even on a trailer hitch. Do you have any suggestions for mounting it? And what are the biggest difference in the models of controllers that you have?
Gosh, but the controllers are easy to answer for me, because the actual antenna is that, you know, mounting that, I've seen the pipe mount. It seems to be the best way to do it, but yet that's for a truck type mounting, and because that's real sturdy, and that antenna is huge. It's a really big antenna, and it requires some, you know, good mounting to keep it stout. The best thing I can tell them on the mounting part is to get up on our website and check out all the mounting situations, because if he's mounting on a car, that's a whole different story. On the controllers, we have three different controllers. The one that comes with the antenna pretty much is a up-down switch. And then there is a SDC one, that's the SDC 100B. And then the SDC 102 is a 10 memory, up down switch. So in other words, you can go manual and go up and down and, control the antenna that way. Or you can have 10 preset memories and push a button and go to 80 meters or go to 40 meters in a certain bandwidth. And you just push a button and get there. So it'll actually turn your antenna and take it to where you want it to go. The final entry is the SDC 104, and that is either labeled for an I, ICOM, K, Kenwood, or Y, Yaesu, obviously. And that one actually takes the band data from your rig, and you don't have to push a button on the controller. You just got to let the rig control the antenna and the controller. The controller can be put into manual mode where you can just go to an up and down situation, but primarily you're going to use the band data from your radio and just let the radio tune your antenna, basically.
And your auto insurer would love for you to get the fully automatic one if you're driving in Houston.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't want you pushing buttons, Frank. You're right.
All right, and I'll jump in here with one more here. Roy in Marysville, Ohio, he has an older Cushcraft 40-meter beam, and looks like his rotor has gone out on him. That's never any fun. Do you have any suggestions for a replacement that would work with his 40-meter beam?
Well, the 40-meter beam, obviously, we got high gain, so we've got rotators. And I'll mention, you know, when we bought High Gain in 2000 and we bought Cushcraft in 2010, both of those companies, the reason why they're so good and the reason why Mr. Jew wanted them so good was, I mean, wanted the name so badly, is because they're long-term parts. When you buy an antenna from Cushcraft or buy an antenna or a rotator from High Gain, you're going to get something that will never run out of style. Even though it may look older, you know, we're talking about stuff from the 1940s and the ham four, the original ham four from Cornell Dubler days. Most of the machines that were used back then to make that ham four are still made, I mean, used today to make the ham four that we make. Going with the high gain rotator, I suggest, by a whole lot of means, we service them. We've been around for 43 years. The company is not going away, and the parts are one of the biggest part of those two companies. We sell more parts probably than we do finished goods because people take their antennas down and they put them back up with new parts. So I think that's the big deal there.
Well, there's a guy named Tom Stone who is, and I mean this in the best possible way, if you remember the Forrest Gump movie, when the sergeant in the military, and I won't quote him exactly for obvious reasons, Private Gump, why did you put that gun together so fast? And he said, because you told me to, Sergeant. Tom Stone can probably take apart and reassemble a high gain rotor blindfolded.
Tom's been there, Frank, for longer than I have. I think he's almost 30 years now. Most of our people have been there for a long time, and that's another honor to Mr. Jew, I guess. People stick around because it's not because it's easy, because he can be hard. Now I'm telling you all the good stories, but he is a hard boss, but he demands a certain amount of perfection, like every boss does. But people stick around because the job is fun. It's a lot of different variety of jobs. You know, if I was just answering phones all day and answering complaints all day, I don't think I would stick around that long because it's a hard job to do. But since I get to go on the Ham Fest, I get to do the catalog, I get to do publish some books, I get to go on the QSO radio show, you know, it's a great deal.
I want to say that part of your tech support, and I don't want to... I don't want to get into real craziness, but I mean, part of your tech support, though, has to include a little customer insanity. I know that you've been through some of that, and I'm not here to antagonize the situation, but I have taken phone calls, you know, for one reason or another, and you know, the person on the end of the phone seems to have lost all sense of reality, and it doesn't seem what you do. You just can't seem to get them to find the power switch, you know, or where the battery is located, or, you know, the fact that they have to remove four screws. I'm just curious about that. I thought you might have some funny stories to tell.
I'm amazed, Ted. I mean, you know, being in this business 21 years, I guess I miss the real heyday of back when everybody built their own stuff and they knew more than you did. When I first started, obviously everybody that called in knew more than I did, and they would say, "Are you a ham?" And I'd say, "Not right now. I'm going to get my license." You know, Mr. Jew made me get my license, but you know, back when that first started, it was really tough. But yeah, we had people send back tuners with bricks in them, and they took the components out and they stole them. Basically, you know, what we wouldn't find out necessarily because we're so honest and so trustworthy MFJ guys that we wouldn't find out until later that, hey, this came back and had bricks in it. Just like the story I was telling you about the woman that threw the watt meter away in the trash. You know, we've had those crazy stories too. And then we have the stories that Mike Franken mentioned about the glorious watt meter and the glorious audio machine. Mr. Jew was in the audio business at one time, 35 years ago, and we still get some of that stuff back. But, you know, you get these things back, and a lot of times they'll tell you on the phone, yeah, it's in pristine condition, you know. And then you get them back and nowhere near. I mean, they look like they've fallen off the roof or something, you know. But one of the greatest stories I guess I ever heard in repair was that this guy, he called up and he said he had dropped his analyzer down from the tower and it landed in a bucket of water. And then it froze and he forgot about it. He completely forgot about it. And it froze, and then in the spring he let it thaw out. And he dripped all the water out of it and everything. And of course, it didn't work, but he sent it back to us. And somehow, one of our guys actually made that thing work. And we charged the guy $85 and sent it back to him, and it was working. So there are some amazing stories. Lightning damage, obviously, is a bad problem. And if that happens, generally, we cannot fix something. But every once in a while, something will have lightning damage where it doesn't damage it doesn't burn up the whole board, you know, and we actually repair something and save a guy some money, and it helps a whole lot. But our guys in there, they have a major job, and we've slacked off, we have a lot less people than we used to have back when I first started working. There was like 7 guys in there. Now there's like 4. So the job is much increased, and obviously the amount of product has increased. So they handle all the parts orders. They handle an 800 toll-free tech line, which is unheard of in this world today. I don't think any of the other companies have such. In fact, I've heard from a guy today that some of the companies only will allow you to get tech support by email. We actually talk to people in person on the phone every day, you know, from 8 to 4:30. And then they handle the parts. And somewhere in between all that, they're supposed to repair these products that have come back. So it's an amazing, amazing factory, amazing job that everybody does in the place.
Well, I'll tell you 2 quick stories. It's not just in ham radio. I was actually working in Clarksville, Tennessee at a group of stations, and we had a bad ice storm, and a chunk of ice fell off the 10-bay FM broadcast antenna and came down the tower, hit the STL, the studio transmitter link
receive antenna and busted the dipole right off. Okay, so we had nothing at that point. Now, studio transmitter link means that the signal is sent on a high frequency microwave link, 900 megahertz or so, from the studio to the tower. And of course, that dish is way up in the air, and that's how we get the signal to feed the radio station. Well, that the dipole broke. We had nothing. Okay, so I go back to the radio station and I grab what is known as an RPU transmitter, which is a remote transmitter, one that we use. I think it was a MARTI unit. We used it to transmit from a remote location back to the radio station, and we had a receive antenna way up on the tower. So I hooked a transmitter to it. I hooked one of those MARTI transmitters to that antenna way up in the air, and went out to the transmitter site and hooked up the receiver to the spare 10-bay FM. It got enough signal, and we had a path. We had it wasn't stereo and didn't sound real pretty, but we were on the air playing music and spots. That's the object, I think, you know. So I go back to the radio station, and the general manager walks up to me, and she says, why did you do this, and why did it take so long to do this? And I said, well, the ice fell and busted the antenna. And then she stops me. She says, well, couldn't we just put on a CD? She was serious, you know. Yeah. Another friend of mine, Kirk Harnack, works for Telos Omnia, also a ham. He's doing tech support on the phone to this girl, and she's off the air. Station's gone, okay? And so he's trying to talk her through the remote control and, you know, look at the plate voltage, plate current, and all this kind of stuff. Well, you know, she's talking to him on the phone, and he's trying to talk her through little tech support. And so she says to him, hang on right now. I've got a break coming up. And she lays the phone down, turns on the mic, does her break, talks the next record, and comes back to him and says, oh, okay, I'm back, you know. And the first thing out of his mouth was, you're off the air. Why are you doing this? You know? So what I'm saying is that level and I've seen it with hams. I've had friends of mine call me up, and I'm telling you, it's kind of scary how clueless some of them are. I mean, they really just don't know. I mean, I'm not being mean-spirited. I mean, they're just... I think on a day-to-day basis, that could become very frustrating dealing with a mass of people who, you know, you say, well, look on the back of the rig, look at the SO239. Was that the what? What is that? You know, the coax connector, you know, you're trying to explain to them that there's a center conductor and a shield, just basic things. I know you have to go through a lot of that. So I wanted to bring it up because I thought there might be some real funny stories. Maybe they're more tragic than they are.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, you know, because back when I first started, it seemed like everybody knew a whole lot more. But now there's, you know, the newer guys coming in. Not to say that they're stupid by any means. They just are brand new to this hobby, and they're not used to putting their hands on stuff. And even if you tell a guy to, you know, to slide that battery in and press it down with two thumbs, you know, talking about a 418 Morse code tuner, for instance, we build a real tight cabinet there, and people are afraid to force that battery in there, even if you tell them to do it. God forbid when I tell a lot of these automatic tuner guys to do a hard reset by pulling the main U1 firmware chip and reseating it and then doing the factory reset per the manual. That is a part of something we can tell people to do at home to try not to send in the product to repair. So, and sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes guys just are not willing to put their hands inside. They don't want to open the unit at all. And I can't blame them for that and a little bit, but at the same time, you know, here's MFJ telling you to do it, just do it. But, you know, I can understand some guys are a little nervous about electronics.
Well, yeah, they're afraid they're going to break it. You know, yeah, exactly. I just pushed too hard and cracked this thing, you know. I mean, I think everyone has that kind of apprehensive
you know, added to. It's like working on your own rig. You know, I mean, it's like funny. Somebody can bring something over to the house, and the next thing you know, we're all into it, and we've got the magnifier and the lights and the soldering iron and all that kind of stuff, and we're right into it.
Oh, yeah.
But then when it's your own rig, I don't know. Exactly. There's something coils up inside of you that they call courage. You know, it's like, I don't want to touch this. Go ahead.
It's like your dad telling you to get into that car, you know, and change the tire or change the oil or whatever. People don't do that nowadays either. So they take it down to the lube place and pay $59.95 or up to $100 to change the oil instead of doing it themselves.
You know, I'll tell you something. Frank here is, I know him and Martin are good friends. And, I mean, he could probably keep up with you almost here, I think, with stories.
Oh, yeah. He's got stories, yeah.
But I guess I was going to say, Frank, do you have any Richard Stubbs stories you can tell? Because... Well, it's interesting because I think everybody knows you. I was looking at the emails coming in here and stuff. People are acquainted with you. You've been dealing with the general public for a number of years, and I say general public, amateur radio general public. So I was going to say, Frank, why don't you talk a little bit about Richard's background and what you know about him. Now, you know, don't tell any stories that are, you know...
hey, that's Listen. The only kind of stories there are, right?
Well, I'll tell you, I wanted to post something on my blog at k4fmh.com announcing we had rescheduled Richard. And I think, Ted, what you've been asking, Richard, may give our listeners a little bit of insight and understanding that when Richard inadvertently stood us up a couple of weeks ago, he went home, fired up the grill, turned his cell phone off, and went to Margaritaville. And I'd sent a note in to Holly that you needed to bring Richard in with Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville tonight. But I see how far that went. But I know Richard because I actually worked with Richard's wife at a research center. She was there on staff and handled mostly accounting and things like that. And when you're in a research center at a university, it lives on money. I mean, you've got to bring money in, and keeping up with that money is very important because we guarantee the federal government that, you know, we're honest and we spend things like we're supposed to spend, and we have to show that and have all these other assurances. So I know about Richard to some degree through a few stories from his wife. But I think something that will characterize what I know about Richard is that I searched for a picture to put on my blog to say we had rescheduled him. The first one that popped up was a Gene Simmons-like tongue stretched out. I can no longer stick mine out as that far anymore because of my surgery. But he just didn't have the makeup on. And I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. What people don't know about Richard is what kind of family man he is and his work with his kids and with soccer and doing the kind of things that a lot of people will sort of try to get around and not do as much. But Richard is there where it should be. And the second thing is that he began in advertising in the newspaper business. And so he gets a little bit of that customer service wherewithal, because when you're out there selling advertising, as you know yourself, Ted, you've got to be able to meet and greet people on their terms, not yours. I guess even the New York Times have to do that. So Richard gives a little bit of a persona of a devil may care person out on the road. But what I see him doing is he works with Martin Jew and Randy Romero in team building. That's why you have so many MFJ employees who have been there over 25 years. The line that I want to explore based on your question, Ted, is not that many people know who all Richard knows. So some of the stories about Richard are, Richard, tell us some of the famous people that you've gotten to meet and you've gotten to know because they're hams. And if you go in Richard's office, you've got all these autographed pictures from people that you instantly recognize. I don't think you've got one from Gene Simmons, though, but that might be on your list.
No, no, I don't think he's a ham radio operator. But we got Joe Walsh, of course, WB6ACU. He has a great spot on my wall, of course, because he's probably the most famous ham that I have on the wall. And I've actually talked to the guy on the phone and left a message on his, hey, leave me a message and maybe I'll call answering machine. That was a true story. And that was remarkable. And, of course, Martin Parker, who is a drummer for Patti Loveless, who was also a ham. I never did get her QSO card, but I do have Martin Parker, and he's got a little cartoon. I think he's up there in your area, Ted. I think he was originally from Nashville, but he used to come down to Starkville a few times. But I haven't seen him in a long time. I don't know where of his whereabouts. But of course, Bob Heil and I have talked a lot, and love to talk to him about his food stories and the Peter Framptons and the Joe Walsh stories. And then, of course, George Thomas, who I got to know over the last probably 10 years, is just a fantastic guy. And, of course, I've met Ted Randall and Holly and your son, who works for Dave Ramsey, and those are great people to know, too. One year, though, one of my most fascinating meet and greets of some kind of stardom, and this is a funny story, but it was at Huntsville. A lot of great things happen in Huntsville, Ted, and Frank, you know that, too. Good parties happen there, too. But anyway, we were in the old hotel across the street. This was before the embassy was even thought about coming up, I think. But down through the hallway, I could see this giant of a man walking through the hallway. He was turned out it was Paul the Big Show, which is one of the wrestling guys. That night after their wrestling match, and of course we had the Ham Fest, we were all sitting in the bar, and the giant was sitting down there chain smoking, and he ordered a pizza. And the pizza finally came, and we were all like, okay, well, we're a little bit drunk, but let's stick around for a little while because we want to watch this guy eat this pizza. This is a 7'4", 360-pound man. So we sat around and waited for him to eat this pizza while he rips the top of the box off, you know, with just one hand. And, you know, I guess that's easy to do for even me, but, it would look more impressive by this big guy doing it. And then he proceeds to start picking the mushrooms and daintily putting them in his mouth. So that was a letdown. But my buddy asked him, he said, hey, why don't you pick up Richard here? And he said, nah, man, I'm done working. So, you know, I guess everybody needs their time off, you know.
There you go.
He has, one of the things about the culture there, and I've gotten to know Martin because I was a customer. And when I was over in Atlanta, I was a new ham and in Atlanta Radio Club, and we recently had Bill Perkins on, who's a vice president, been president a time or two. They're saying, hey, we've got to get a big name speaker. That's something we just haven't done lately. So I'm new guy, and I said, well, hey, what about Martin G? Oh, there's no way we could get Martin. I mean, I don't know how we could do that. So the next club meeting, I kind of raised my hand, and I said, well, I've gotten Martin G agreed to come over. And, oh, what's that going to cost? I said, well, I think he's going to drive over. I don't think it's going to cost anything. Well, to make a long story short, in the Wayne's World movie of We're Not Worthy, I was treated We're Not Worthy. How did you get Martin Jew to come over to Atlanta? I said, well, there was two things. I called him on the telephone and asked him. And number two, he said he has a daughter who lives in Atlanta, and she's also a ham. So there was really no magic to that. But the culture of MFJ is so open And I will say this. I've been fooling with shortwave radio since I was 8 years old and have fooled with radio a long time. And I've not been a professional engineer like Ted and George Thomas have. And George is now back in the engineering business. But Martin has forgotten 10 times more than I'll ever know. And he's had ideas. He gets a lot of them over the transom. But many of those products, such as the little earpiece that will amplify hearing, what many people would call a hearing aid, that came about because Martin's about deaf in one ear. And so he developed that primarily for himself, but realized that a lot of other hams would like that. One of the issues that MFJ has, and Martin and I go to lunch and talk quite a bit, is that market's interesting. There's a lot of electrical engineering students there, very much like Martin was at one time. But the immigration laws have changed so that many of the student visa students who are so bright and so ambitious, they cannot be employed. They might be able to do an internship. Ben Stapp came back to Starkville from having worked in a cellular telephone industry in Atlanta for a number of years, and he's originally from, is it Aberdeen or Amory?
I think it's Aberdeen or Amory. You and I talked just a while back about that. I think it's Aberdeen, actually.
Yeah, and he and his wife have restored an old home there, a lot of beautiful homes. That used to be the site of a lot of millionaires back in the heyday of cotton. But it's hard to get engineers of that caliber who are going to stay there and be there long term. So one of the issues that Martin has is there's a lot of ideas, even in his office, that actually he and I've kind of tinkered with, that he has to get them into prototype stage, and there's only so many hours in the day. So that's a little bit of a stopping point or sticking point. So they're looking to hire. So if there's a bright young engineer that would like to go to a small town and be part of a culture that is very innovative, there's some job ads out, and Randy Romero is the HR person. I'm giving a free plug for you, Richard.
Yes, that's great.
So anyway, Ted,
we've been advertising that fact on Facebook too, you know, and on Twitter and all that. So that is something we got to look toward the future, is getting some young blood, because we're all getting old.
Ted, I will share a Richard story. Richard gave Martin the big pitch on social media, and you know, it's the wave of the future, and we need to do all that. And so Martin and I were going to lunch, and he said, "Frank, do you use social media?" Now, Ted, you know, Martin was not totally oblivious to what social media was. He probably knew more about the engineering side of it than I did. And I said, "Oh yeah, that does a lot of guerrilla marketing and other kinds of." And they knew what guerrilla marketing meant. And so it's interesting because he said, "Well, Richard wants to do that." So I've kind of watched it. Somehow my little nod of approval meant something to him, and he's gotten into Facebook and Twitter, and Richard's taken the lead on that. And I think it's humanized and personalized, a couple of more sociological terms, Ted, the company, because it's been really Martin as the face, but people like Richard and others, as they've gotten known, I think it brings a company beyond that catalog. And Ted, you too could be a model for the MFJ catalog.
Oh, I could. Yeah.
I need to use Ted. Yeah.
You get me a picture in out by my swimming pool in my swimsuit, standing there with an antenna analyzer, you know, in my hand and whatnot. Listen, you know what? We are out of time. As they say, we have talked the proverbial hind legs off the mule, is what we've done.
It's easy talking to buddies that you know, that's part of it.
Well, what I want to do, Richard, I want to pass it over to you, and we aren't totally dead out of time, but we're getting close. And I was just going to say, why don't you go ahead and just talk a little bit, or kind of bring things to a conclusion, things that you may want to tell folks that have tuned in, MFJ fans, obviously you've got fans out there, and just kind of give us a brief overview of maybe some highlights of some things that you'd like to talk about quickly before we have to pull the plug.
MFJ is going into its 44th year in 2016, which is a major achievement. Once again, of course, we won't really celebrate that until we hit the 45th because, you know, we celebrate those in 5-year increments. We are working on a new catalog. It's not going to increase any pages, but we are going to add a few new gadgets that Mr. Jew has been working on and some more fun little toys to play with. That will be coming out probably right mid-December. And then we'll of course, do a new one at Dayton, Ohio, Hamvention, of course. That's the big deal. So we'll do another catalog then, and we'll have a whole lot of more new exciting things to come. I personally will be traveling to Cincinnati, Ohio, actually Hamilton, Ohio, where R&L Electronics store is on December 5 for their store show. I'm driving the big MFJ truck up there, and as Roger says, he's going to have fun with it. He's going to buy lots of MFJ stuff and stock up his store for the next 2016. And then we'll be looking forward to the new year, of course, and Jackson, Mississippi will be our nearest and dearest Hamfest coming up quick. And if you haven't been to Jackson, Mississippi Hamfest, you're missing a growing Hamfest, and it is getting bigger and bigger, and there's going to be a lot more people there this year because another Hamfest that was in the Midwest has changed its date, and so they're going to be coming over as well.
That's January 29th and 30th. That's a Friday and Saturday. It begins with Ham College, led by the 599DX group on Friday night, and it will have programs until 5 o'clock the next day, Richard. That's new. The Magnolia Intertie will have a repeater program, and it will feature Chris Wilson from Yaesu coming in by Skype, and we may have a surprise guest or two. So it will be wall to wall this year in Jackson, January 29th and 30th of 2016.
And, one more thing, we did have 5 more new people get their 20-year plaques this year. So I think Randy told me the statistic was some 60% over 20 years now at MFJ of the employee base, and we're talking roughly right under 200 folks. So 60% of our base has been at MFJ and working hard for all of our customers out there for 20-something years.
Well, we are we're about out of time. So, listen, Richard, I want to say thank you so very much for joining us on this edition of QSO Live. And, Frank, I'm going to turn it to you for final comments, and then we have to say 73s to everybody.
Great.
Listen, Richard, great having you on. And I consider Richard a close friend, and he's always there to help you out when you call. Richard's never let me down on anything. So great having you aboard, Richard.
I appreciate that, Frank. And anybody that needs me, 800-647-1800, extension 123. And, of course, my email is directly on the catalog, the front of the catalog, so you can't miss me.
All righty. Well, I want to say thank the both of you. Richard, for being here. Frank, our co-host, want to say thanks for joining us tonight. Folks, thank you for listening. We really appreciate you tuning in. We want to invite you to come back next week, same time, same station, for QSO Live. Here at the QSO Radio Show, we really need to hear from you. Go to our website, simply QSORadioShow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com, and you'll see all the past podcasts up there and other information. But go to the part where it says email Ted and send us an email, and be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because always giving something away. Go to the website, it's simply QSOradioshow.com, and send us an email. And while you're at it, be sure and friend us on Facebook, QSO Radio Show, and follow us on Twitter, QSO Radio Show. And thank you for listening. Well, that's about all the time we've got for QSO this week. Hey, thank you for listening. We really appreciate your company here. Want to remind you, we'll be back next week, same time, same station, same podcast, wherever you're listening. We'll be back, at least hopefully, Lord willing, on the Creek Don't Rise. Special thank you to our guest, Richard Stubbs from MFJ Enterprises, and our special co-host, Frank Howell, K4FMH. This is Ted Randall, WBAPUM, don't know my own call sign, saying 73s.